Hey listeners, this is Abir Sigdar. On this episode of Local Global Leaders, titled Groundswells Happen Here in Small Towns, I had the honor of speaking with Jose Cubero, the mayor of Shepherdsville, Kentucky. In our conversation, Mayor Cubero shares his journey from business to coaching to his diverse background and his deep love for sports and recreation as tools to empower young people. He also talks about how those experiences shape his approach to local development and how he uses that to focus on engaging youth and families as mayor. And from investing in projects like a major skate park to a new aquatic center, he thinks creatively about what both strengthens the economy and community life. His vision and leadership is rooted in building spaces where people thrive. And as a fun note, during the interview, you may hear the two Shepherdsville City Hall cats, Sheppy, named after Shepherdsville, and then Bullet, named after Bullet County. You may hear them making a guest appearance during our interview and doing some purring. Now, here's my conversation with Mayor Jose Cubero. All right, greetings, listeners. This is Abir Sigdar. I'm here today in Shepherdsville in the office of Mayor Jose Cubero. Mayor, thank you so much for welcoming to your great office and to your city.
Well, we appreciate you coming out to it because we do everything we can to let people know more about Shepherdsville. It's been a town that's obviously been underrated, undervalued, and we really believe that there's a lot of good assets starting with the people. But we got finances to actually show that Shepherdsville is going to be a place that you can enjoy when you stop by.
That's awesome. That's exciting to hear. I definitely want to hear more about the town, but first I want to start off with hearing about yourself. So I'll just start off with what I call your six-word story. What are six words you'd use to describe yourself?
I would say that obviously I'm effective, leadership, passionate, visionary, empathetic, and committed. What I mean by that, there's a mixture of I'm trying to show that, you know, when you think about the way that you're looking at what you want to get done, what's the goal? What's the goal? Why is it the goal? And who's the benefit of it? Mm-hmm. And I think in some of the things that you'd mentioned to me, always doing things for the whole, not the one. If you always think doing things for the whole and not the one is you. That if it's always a benefit just to you, if it's fame and glory and money, that isn't the reason why you would ever be an elected official. If you're really truly doing that for that reason, that's a self-contained for you. That's your benefit. I tend to believe that people that really are elected officials, that in especially small towns, where the opportunity is to make that difference. When we talk about things that happen in our world, and we look at the country, and we look at states, if we think about groundswells happen here in small towns, showing that you can get together, you can collaborate, you can work together. It can't be a political divide, as we see so much in our country, and even across the world, we see this division. That's the thing that I always try to tell people is that what is your mission and why? So for me, I look at Shepherdsville. I've been out here 18 years. And in these 18 years, I grew up, obviously, step back for a minute. I grew up in the Fort Knox area. My dad was in the military. You know, we traveled a lot up until I was 8 years old. And we stationed in Fort Knox. We grew up there, played baseball, went to Bellarmine University in Louisville. And got a chance to really see things, and was in a restaurant business, made a lot of money in that world. It's a very time-consuming part. The quality of life seems to diminish a little bit there. And I've spent the last 25 years of my life being in the produce business. And I had, at one point, in 13 and 14, I was on the city council here in Shepherdsville. And then didn't win the next election, and so I thought, well, I'm not doing anything more with this. And through those years, I kept watching what was happening in this town. And the unique thing about Shepherdsville is, when they built the turnpike back in the late 70s through the city, it was gonna change it forever. You never built an interstate right through the middle of the city and not to see it was gonna not be distribution and manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And when you did that, the city wasn't ready for that. And so it kind of just evolved itself into this point. But what didn't happen during that time, they catered to the traffic on the interstate with all the fast food restaurants. When you drove up here, you could have probably counted about 50 of them. Yeah. It's quite a few. And then you also see that on the next exit down, it's all industrial. It's all about the warehouses and things that logistically work because the interstate is right through the middle of your city. You're 15 minutes away from the UPS and the airport. What did you think was going to happen here? And so for me, I looked at that and said, wait a minute, there are still families living here. So I ran on one mission to improve the quality of life, for the families here in our community. That was my mission. And so what did that take? So if I had that as a mission, what would I consider quality? Well, how about just having baseball, t-ball, and softball back here? We didn't have that. I can't imagine any small town in USA that didn't have baseball, t-ball, and softball for their kids. So we worked hard to bring that very back thing. We also made sure that when you stopped into the city, what did you see? Did you see a clean city? Did you see that things look really appropriate? So we worked on that. We consider 44, Highway 44, and Interstate 65 our front door. Mm. What's your front door look at your house like? What does it look like? So we wanted people to feel more welcoming and coming here. So we wanted to start working on how it was cleaned. How was it we have recreational sports? But then we were in such a great financial position, we made a really big decision. In the first 6 months, we decided we were gonna borrow $30 million. And that $30 million was to actually bring on a beautiful aquatic center, more than just for the city itself. The $30 million was actually planning a vision of having something of a high quality aquatic center, indoor, outdoor pool, splash pad, 2 26-foot slides, birthday room, a police station inside, 6 indoor pickleball courts, which is a popular sport at this point. So when you do that, you're not just doing it for the people that live here, but you bring more people to your community. You actually start thinking, people say, wow, with such a nice facility, maybe a place I'd like to live. So here for me, a lot of times when I look at things, you had to make a statement with, why not Shepherdsville? So we did, we were financially in a position, we were able to do that. Since that time, as we continue the completion, which will be done July 1st of 2026, the Aquatic Center will be open. It's just about a half mile from this office. So the key in that was we wanted to develop our park. So we talked about what are those things going to improve the quality of life? How about a 1,600-seat amphitheater? How about an all-inclusive playground with its own splash pad for the kids, including a gagaball court, a basketball court, and another pickleball court out there? How about a dog park? A full-size dog park for our families to utilize, a 5K. We have disc golf. We have sand volleyball. We aesthetically changed the one side of the park. We put new landscape in place, so it was very welcoming to be there. We cleared out so you could see the river when you're walking through the trails. So we've done a lot of things to kind of step by step. Now that's $30 million. That's $12 million. That's $42 million. And in the 3 years, we have not raised a penny in taxes. We also lowered your home property taxes and your personal. We lowered both of them as well. So the city is in a financial situation that it's doing really, really well. So we reinvested that money. That comes back to the mission. So the whole benefits from that, not the one. And so I always believe if you're gonna do things like this in a community, you're saying something to all communities. How about we focus on what we can have? Some things may not be, and we are in a blessed situation. At the same time, we can be damned by having that interstate through us, right? Accidents happen on 65. When they do, they really make a chaotic situation on our roadways here. And I think that's important. So I think when you look at, if you have this vision, and one of the other nice things I'm very proud of, when people get elected, they change the people that come in. They put the new chiefs in and they bring their people in. I didn't do that. I left everybody but one position. I changed one position that I was concerned about. Everybody else is the same people that have been here for years. And what I've learned is let good people do good stuff. And yeah, I think that's the way. So the politics is, I call perks or spoils, right? You know, yeah. If a beer, he sponsors me and he campaigns with me, I'm gonna find a position for her. And I made it very clear during the campaign. I made no promises to people for jobs. I wouldn't do that. I wanted to make sure as a business guy, you don't go into a business and say, I'm gonna fire everybody. You go in there and you work with everybody for a while and see who's gonna be able to do the job. You might let a couple of people go, but you don't wipe out the whole team. So I think it's an attitude that most people need to understand. If you've got people doing good work, find out if they're capable to do it at the level that you expect. Once you do that, I think the accountability part and managing people in the right way is an important thing.
It's cool hearing about like the development you're doing in the town and your mission to run on like that quality of life. And it sounds like recreation and sports, like that's an important part of that. And that's probably like part of your background you're pulling into that mission, right?
Sure. So I coached for years. I've been involved in different sports. I think it's important for people to remember sports is just one attitude. You know, people like music or want to act. I want kids to do whatever they want to do. My focus when we talk about quality of life for our families is to have things, but make them affordable, if not free. One thing about Shepherdsville is, unfortunately, 1 out of 4 people live in poverty here, okay? Because of that, we do a very good job of trying to make these things affordable. Since January of 23 until now, every Saturday, we have a gym inside of City Hall. We put on free programs. So it might be 4 weeks of baseball. You come in, you get, it's no charge. You just come in, we teach you some fundamentals about it, and then see if you like baseball. We do 6 weeks of volleyball. We do 6 weeks of soccer. We do gaga ball. We do skateboarding. You know, we do all the things that kids can learn about sports without moms and dads spending a ton of money. And maybe they'll find, the kid will find, the typical thing would be is, you know, Billy loves basketball. He wants to get all his uniform stuff, get a couple of basketballs. And then he says he don't want to play. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Nah, I want to do something different. Well, that gives the parents a chance to bring the kids. And they're very appreciative of having these programs. We've had them. One of the things that we did is after my first year, we have a bullet blast, the 4th of July fireworks and all that fun stuff in the park. Well, after the first year, I saw a situation that I was watching. And I saw a little kid, he was tugging on his mom's sleeve and said, I'm going to go on that ride. You know, he can't get on the ride without an adult. So she had to pay his $10 for his ticket, and then she had to buy a $20 ticket for her because she had to go on the ride with him because he wanted the ride. Well, I said that wasn't going to happen anymore. So the last 2 years, we've made all the rides free. So everybody can enjoy it. So last year, we had approximately, kind of guessing 6,000 to 7,000 people in our park when we were lighting up the fireworks. Wow. Because more people, more families could enjoy free rides for that. And then at least have money to get some food and enjoy their time. And so we do things like that. I'm very considerate of that because I realize that we want to make it a memorable experience for all, right? And so when we talk about kids, you know, let them get involved in sports. I want you to scrape your knees, skin your elbows, you know, get some grass stains on you. I think we need to let kids be kids. Mm-hmm. From the time that you're born until you're 12 or 13, there are social things you're going to deal with when you get a little bit older. But can we just let you be a kid? Because I want kids to start having value. If you look right outside that window, you'll see $1 million skate park.
Oh, wow.
And we built it right there and we had it for the kids. And it's there because we wanted to be in a safe place. A lot of times they build these skate parks in places that are a little bit more remote, that aren't as safe. I know I'm not picking on downtown Louisville, but it's a very dangerous place to go to at times, especially in the nighttime. So what we do is that we have the fire department here, the police department, and the mayor's office looking right at that window. So we know those kids are safe. And so we're gonna have lights and cameras and everybody to take care of it. And it's for kids a little bit older, mom can drop you here and go across the street to Walmart, right? So that you can do shopping and Billy can enjoy his time out there in the skate park. Kids love it. I mean, even during the snow, they were shoveling off the snow off the skate park so that they could get on that. And it's really cool. We've been watching the kids out there. It just gives them things to do. We hope that if you do these type of things, that when it comes to experimenting with drugs or getting involved in criminal activity, you won't do it because your life will mean more value to it. It's that road, that question mark when you get to that road. Are you going left or right? And you'll do it because you'll think about all your memories, the things that you do. That value comes into place. And so for me, that's important. You know, we're not fixing the world, but we are going to try to make a difference in the kids that actually grow up here, that turn out to be good citizens, to be a part of this community. And I think like that. I mean, it's a little deeper in thought, but it is very simple. Let kids be kids. And so I look at that. Sports, great place to start. You've got discipline, this respect, working together. Things that you have to really work, you're going to have that all your life. And so if you learn those kind of attributes now, then you're going to be more successful than most. And that's how I look at the kid from a kid standpoint. So that's been important to me. And it's been really important that we've had the finances to do it. Great team to make it work. And the community is really behind it. It really is. We've seen so many more people that want to be involved. Hey, how can I help? How can I clean up projects? And just being involved in the city has really made a big difference for us.
Yeah, well, that's amazing to hear all the development you've had. And like, it's cool to hear like your forward-thinking ideas with like the youth and young people and like your background and like love of sports. Like, how has your background in business kind of shaped your approach to government? You're talking about that a little bit.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. That's a culture shock. When you get to be in the position of being mayor, you're real excited because in my other job as a regional VP for Piazza, what I've learned is there are different procedures. And I get it. It's taxpayers' money. So you want to overlay guidelines and procedures to make sure you protect taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. Got it. It's been the only thing that I could have probably given you one word called impatient. You know, I'm very impatient. I'm trying to get things done. I run 100 miles an hour. If you talk to people, they'll say, yeah, it goes about 100. It goes about 100. But I'll say the business part of it, what it does, the pieces that count are the managerial piece. You really don't teach government officials to really manage people. And what I mean by that is setting clear goals, set the priorities. And so the biggest thing that I've noticed is that accountability, and you can do it fairly. You know, I think in the business world, you'll learn that you have to work with people that you don't always see eye to eye. But if they're an effective part of your team, you do not let your personal piece come into play. And so what I've learned is, because of some of the, I don't call it nepotism, but the way you see the way that I mentioned earlier about how you bring in people, that you bring in your team, I don't believe in that. And what I mean is that I should be able to be, set clear guidelines with people I work with. Business people, they manage, they hold them accountable, and then they follow up. You know, there's a lot of, you can set good goals, but if you don't follow along the way to make sure those goals have been, you don't be surprised how it doesn't turn out. I mean, that doesn't work that. So business skills are good. Finances, I can tell you today, the finance piece of this, I love numbers. I really do love budgets, and we're doing really, really well. And for me, that's the exciting part about it. When I mentioned earlier to you about the $30 million and then the $12 million and did not raise a penny in taxes. Mm-hmm. For us to not do that was because we managed it. We made interest off our monies and did different things. And so for that, that's another part. So you have to have a business skill to be able to manage people. You have to have finances in there. And you gotta communicate well. If you cannot communicate, if you're just a person that says, I want this done, and doesn't put the reasons why and then what methods could be done, and then they incorporate people's. If you want to have a successful team, they have to have skin in the game. They got to be invested. Well, they're not going to be invested if you don't give them the opportunity to share their ideas and things that work. It can't be my way or the highway. I don't believe in that. I believe I've gotten some great ideas because people believe in the mission. You know, you've got to be able, as a manager or as a mayor, to be able to look at somebody, tell them something, and sometimes it's negative, and be able to walk away. Now, how do they react? How do they react when you told them that that wasn't the right way to do it? I need to do it this way, and this is the reason why. And be able to sell it. The management styles in the 60s, 70s, and the early 80s was tell it. You told them to do it, and if they didn't do it, they were gone. Well, that doesn't work today. It's more of a selling. You're selling the idea of what you want done. Yes, I'm the mayor. Like, I would never say do it because I'm the mayor. I don't believe that. Do it because I'm the boss. If you're at that level, you're not effective. You've gotten to the point where your tools are not working. You're not doing the right things to sell somebody on the idea of working. Now, this is so different. Now, you're talking to a mayor of a small town. I challenge you to hear this conversation in most small towns. I am not being mean. I'm just being realistic about the people that actually run for these offices. This is not a high-paying job. It's not meant to be. It needs to be more attractive to people that would have business backgrounds and have that finances and that managerial skills. But you need to make sure that it's, what we're trying to do here is a new way of looking at small towns. And the laws are no difference. The laws are no difference for small towns or big towns. So you need to have somebody that can understand the complexities of the statutes today. Our whole ordinances here, there's a lot. And it's all based on what happens at the state and federal level, right? So this isn't just an easy job. It used to be maybe 30 years ago, you could put anybody in this position. Not anymore.
I think that this ties in well to what I call my three key components of leadership: being an effective motivator, a competent manager, and a supportive mentor. And you're talking a lot about the manager aspect. Mm-hmm. With those three M's, like, how do you incorporate those three M's into your leadership style? And do you see them as like three separate things, or is all three things tied together?
No, they are all tied together. And so I was at a fourth grade class, and I go to all the schools. I spend a lot of time with them because I can't go back to the schools and focus and get these kids excited about what's going to be coming to the city. And a kid asked me, why did you become mayor? Great question. I was like, you know, I get that question. And I said, legacy. And I said, there's a whole, it's like 300 kids there. I said, can any of you tell me what legacy means? And two kids nailed it. They nailed it with the idea that you want to leave something. You know, we always talk about leaving it better than it was, but you're also trying to leave it in a way that they'll sustain what you did, mm-hmm. not to let it go back. Because I tell people, Shepherdsville's never going back. What we've done in 3 years is more than they've done in the last 30 years. It is this year alone, I made this comment at one of our city council meetings, and I mean this sincerely. It's not a platitude, it's not exaggeration, but we're transforming the city historically. In a community now, instead of just being a distribution manufacturing type of place. And because of that, the mentoring part is part of the legacy. When you start looking at mentoring, you know, I've been a big brother 22 years. I was with CASA for 13 years. Uh-huh. You know, so we do a lot. I work with different organizations, kosher charities, and we do a lot. My wife and I do a lot. And I think when you start looking at how do you sustain that, because you're not going to be alive forever. You've got to keep, so you need to make sure. Every day I always think about how to develop folks. We use different programs for folks that want to learn more about their jobs. The KLC has a lot of programs. Other programs that are conferences you can go to. I want people to learn as much as they can from everybody else so they can be the best that they can be, because we need to carry that legacy. So it is about mentoring. It is about being that leader. You know, when you talk about really talking about the folks that you want to make an impact on, they got to believe in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Is it really important to do this? There's not a person that doesn't believe I'm very passionate. There isn't a person that doesn't believe I'm very energetic. But they understand that I have a vision that I know is going to be very important to the city. This city could just been the same way, but glorified truck stop for years and nobody doing anything. And there are probably some people that are a little bit older would have probably been okay with that. You know, but once you put that interstate, as I mentioned earlier, right through the middle of the city, no, you lost the small town then. Can you keep some small town? Yeah. We're building a town square. We never had a town square, a two-block town square. That's that bottom right-hand picture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's it. This is all of our park plan. I'm going to kind of, I'll go over that and just show you some pictures. You can take some pictures of that. But it's important. And I can also get you email. I can email you this.
Oh, yeah.
Email pictures of the aquatic center, the playground. But it's important for people to realize if you just got to understand why you do it. Because it is a lot of work. But to me, it's fun. I mean, I'm having fun. Even with politics or politics, even at the local level, people say things and you just like, why did you say that? Do you know me? You don't know me. And see that I spend my time. You know, we're talking about a holiday Monday. I work every holiday Monday. I come in just for, you know, even for a few hours just to do some things my own. It's quiet time. You know, nobody, you know, I finally get some quiet. And I think when you try to decide how you're going to be, you know, what is it that you leave? What do you want to be remembered for? And doesn't give you money. It really doesn't give you fame. But in a small town, they can say, you know what? I'd love to see two people at McDonald's 30 years from now. Let me tell you something crazy we did. In 2022, in November, we elected a guy named Jose Cabrero. And it hasn't been the same since. And that would be the honor that I would love to have. That's the only thing I want. I don't want anything else. I don't want names on buildings. I don't care for that crap. Sorry, but I really want people to say, I'd like to be the story that says, and then the people that continue to carry that legacy on. This legacy isn't just about you. It has to be continued by people that are going to continue to do that. It's like the torch for the Olympics, right? Everybody's got to carry their own. So I believe that. I mean, and again, you know, I've always known there's good people here. I've visited 4,000 homes. During that campaign, I went and did all kinds of stuff. It's very, if you're not from here, it's very hard to break that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that they don't like you. You're just not from here. And I've been here 18 years of my life now. And it's different. You know, like, you're not from here. You don't know us. Well, yes, I do. I do. I know what kids are. And so I've really spent a lot of time really getting people to acclimate to the idea that what we're doing is what's best for our families. And mostly for our kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids. I mean, I kind of pull myself out of the picture, right? I love my family, but I want, what am I leaving? My daughter lives here in Shepherdsville. My son lives in Mount Washington. And so, you know, for me, this is important. And, you know, I want people to listen to this podcast and reach out. I mean, I have my own podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And it's called Yes Way Jose. And two kids came to me, I call them kids. I'm an older guy there. I think one's 18 and one's 32. And they said they would like to do a podcast. I said, okay. I'm in. And they said, give me a name. And then come back. They came back 2 weeks later and said, we got a name. I said, what do you want it to be? Yes Way Jose. Now I like it. I do like it. Because it is a positive approach that No Way Jose has always kind of been the standard saying, right? But to turn it around and actually make it something that Yes Way. And we do a lot of different things. We put elected officials on there. We put business owners. We put nonprofits on there, because nonprofits to me is a love for doing things. Mm-hmm. We have an organization that works with human trafficking. And one thing people don't think about a whole lot is of 65 drug trafficking, human trafficking, from Michigan to Alabama. And, you know, we unfortunately think that there's probably stops in here at times. We would never know some of that coming through this town. That's unfortunate. You know, that's the dark side of our humanity, and we hate to see that. But, you know, with all things said, the podcast is meant, as yours is to be able to get people to look for things that are in a local fashion. You know, Lexington is a big town, and Louisville's a big town. But Shepherdsville is going to be part of Bullock County, which is one of the fastest growing counties in the state. And this project with this aquatic center is probably one of the largest projects in the state right now as we speak. We're excited for that. These folks now have, we are Shepherdsville. Remember the We Are Marshall. Remember that kind of feeling that you got? That's what we have now. We have businesses that are going into our downtown area. We have a brewery, we got an ice cream shop, we got some little boutique shopping places. It's changing, it's evolving all the time. You know, the skate park, as we mentioned, the aquatic center, the town square, all the park plans, all that matters. And then what I hope it does is does two things, is people will look at it as an opportunity to live here. You know, as people want to migrate from bigger cities, maybe this is where you can be and you're still 30 minutes away from work. One of the nice things that's happening to us is that our development with the warehouse is continuing. The job opportunity is coming. Wouldn't it be ideal? It would be great if you can get an affordable job, live and work and play in the same area. Be great, right? Our time is valuable. You know, we don't care to drive if we've got to get to work, but unless you're going to a AAA baseball game or a concert at Lexington or Louisville, you know, if you can do a lot of things here in your own town, if you've got 10 minutes away from your home, an aquatic center, indoor outdoor pool facilities, things you can do here, it's a big deal. I mean, it's really a big splash would part of the pun, but I do think you'll see that's important to me. So it's unique that a small town like this can actually do something so big. But it's because of the resources, the people and the finances that make this thing work.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, like empowerment's a big key of your leadership. Like, how do you empower both the people you talked about, like how you empower the people who work for you, who work for the city, but also your citizens of Shepherdsville?
You know, the best thing you can do there is you learn not to micromanage. Do not micromanage your people. If you said that, if I said I was keeping everybody here, and I turn around and then start telling them how to sharpen a pencil, so do you not have confidence in me to sharpen that pencil? I think that's what I've learned over the years. I used to believe early in my managerial days when I was in my 20s, right? I've learned to get out of that telling. And it started the selling, and then I had to sell. How I had to sell was I had to make sure that he had what they wanted. I had to sit across the table from somebody and said, all right, just explain to me your job. Explain to me how you do it, and tell me what you need. And I researched it, I said, okay, I've learned a little bit more about your job. Sounds like you're really on page on everything you needed. That's just the expectation. Looks like you need a couple things here. Let's get that done, and then, hey, you let me know anything else you need. When I do that, they get rewarded because they did it. It wasn't always on their shoulder. I think micromanaging people doesn't work. Yeah. I think they're people, not everybody can be a good boss. You know, it's the old adage, not the best players make the best coaches. It's because their athleticism was great, but they don't know how to teach somebody that same skill.
Yeah.
They don't know how to teach them. Sometimes they don't have it physically, right, to do it. So when it comes to managing people, you may have a critical thinking skills. The synapses are always popping all the time. And so I can come up with a problem solving like that, if I think about it, right? Just like that. Well, that may not be the same for your folks. Some might be better than me, but it's more important that you give them a chance to figure it out.
Yeah.
If you let them try first, and if they mess up, and it's okay. You know, it's okay. Because remember, unless you're burning down the building, we're okay. Everything's going to be okay. You know, I tell people all the time, it's okay. And I've learned that in my other job with Piazza Produce. I mean, my region is 5 states, so I can't be with everybody every day to make sure they're out there selling and doing the right things and following up, customer service. I can't do that. I've got to set an expectation, spend a little time with you, let you know I'm always there for you, and then you go do what you do. The results come. And if you're not that effective, you'll find out yourself, you'll decide that's not what you want to do, move on. Or if you're not, then we have to at least fairly treat your opportunities, right? You have to say, you know, if he or she is not doing it the right way, we don't feel empathetic and go, well, just a bad day. No, because you have hurt that person. That person that doesn't know that they've done it the right way. And it's interesting. I know this is the biggest piece for me. The managerial piece of managing folks is not an easy thing. Nobody likes conflict. Raise your hand if you like conflict. We don't, but what we want to do is be able to take that piece and say, hey, you can do this, but I'm going to have to hold you accountable. And that if I say that, I've got to be able to say when it's not right, but do it in a positive way. You know, when I go to tell somebody something negative, I'm going to tell you two positives first and then say, hey, but you got to work on that. And you're getting, yeah, see, you got a fan. You got a fan. I just think that's important. I think what we've learned is we go too long and then we let somebody fail. And then we think, wow, they weren't that good. No, because you may have done some things before that could have helped them succeed. It's always been a frustration of mine looking at what I see. I see it in the business world too. It's not just in government. I think, but it's not an easy thing to hold people accountable and to deal with conflict in a very positive way. Because it always seems confrontational, right?
Yeah.
If you're sitting across the table and you're going to tell something bad, how do you feel? So I think sometimes when I look at things, I got to always understand my weaknesses. Maybe my listening skills. My wife will tell you my listening skills are marginal. I'm always thinking about what I want to say next, right? I'm one of those people. But I think it's important too to be patient.
Yeah.
You know, not to understand that people are not like you, but they've just got good skills too. So that goes back into the mentoring and the managing and all the things that we want. That's what a good leader is. And when you look at people that you think are good leaders or good mentors, you can see those qualities. You can see it in them. But to have that ability with all the resources, watch Shepherdsville. It's going to do dynamic things. I mean, really, you just keep watching us. You know, this year we're open. The ribbon cutting is going to be on so many things that we're doing now. So we're pretty excited about all that.
That's amazing. Yeah. I think what you talked about empowerment and like letting people make mistakes and not micromanaging reminds me, one of my first jobs was being a math teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to like learn that in the class. I'm like, oh yeah, like let my kids like, you know, make some mistakes. I even learned too, like, I liked how you talked about like, yeah, like the best top players aren't the best coaches. I was top math student growing up, like got everything, like won mm-hmm. math awards. But a colleague of mine, Mr. Christopher, he was a much better math teacher. Like he was better than the average person at math, but like he was able to connect more with his kids because like he like struggled a little bit with the math, like he, whereas I just got it right away. But I'm like, ironically, that made him a better teacher because he could understand their struggles. Whereas I'm like, oh, that's how you do it. Like, there you go. Next problem. They're like, oh, wait. Yeah.
And it is very hard for,
yeah.
So for me, that's always been, and really, I say this not in any kind of a derogatory way, but you know, I grew up in a, what I call a melting pot and adjusting very quickly. Because when you're in a military family, you move around a lot. We are fortunate, though, that I was 8 years old when we stopped moving. We moved like 10 different places in 8 years, but so it was a lot. But in that time, you were always adjusting, adapting. So I do think that your personal skills are very important today. Our technology is phenomenal, but we're looking too much at this instead of looking people in the eye. Handshakes, right? And so I do concern myself with that. I mean, I think technology is phenomenal, but we just need to keep in balance of the human side of us, right? Just being able to do those things, and like I said, just get out and outdoors, just do things. Again, we talked about kids and being kids, but I really believe if you look at what you're trying to aspire and what I'm trying to aspire, it's no more than one thing. I tell people all the time is that you can win. You want to win alone? You want to win with a team? Okay. Some of the best results, and it's not something that I've done, but it's coincidental. I don't know. Some of the best years of my results as an individual player, our team didn't do very well. When I didn't have some of my best results, the team did better. Now, that doesn't mean anything because I didn't mean anything by that, but it just made me think. So sometimes you always have to remember what your part is and always contributing your part, because not your part, know what your part is, right? That's always important to me. I tell people one other thing. I actually have quite a few sayings, but one of them means a lot to me is people say, what do you do for a living? I'm in the people business. I just happen to sell produce and specialty. That's the line that I was using a lot because I do believe in that. I believe in relationships. You know, when you have a relationship with people, it's easier to work out the differences. If you don't have a good relationship with somebody, then the confrontation is a little bit more, it's conflicting, and now you may not solve it. But if I'm servicing you as a mayor and I've taken your calls, and I've listened to you when I can, so that when you have a problem or need a road fixed or you feel like, you know, there's traffic issues, you know, you're going to at least look at me and go, okay, he's been, he never, I've answered every call I can get, okay? I answer all the emails, and they message me on social media. I make myself available. Anybody needs anything up front, I always come up front, because that makes a difference. So if you don't want to be around people, don't be mayors or don't be managers. because that's important to me, that you have to be willing to be in front of somebody. It's okay. I remember the first time I was a manager at Ponderosa way back when, and I had totally forgot about taking care of this guy, and I came back to him, and he gave me the riot act. And I remember at that point, I apologized to him and told him I just totally forgot about it. He became one of my best regular customers because I dealt with what he dealt with. I apologize. We need to be able to apologize. It's a little bit better when you get older. You don't have to worry about it as much. Somewhere in life, you learn to be a little bit more humble as you get older.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. Just, I want people to be the very best they can. And we started a little bit before this interview. We talked about divisiveness. And the only thing I want to say about this, we need to work together. I mean, the political divides, the ideological divides, you know, even really, I don't know if it's so much religion, so much divides, but we all just need to know that, listen, we're human. That's our common denominator. And if we're all going to be part of something better, we got to find the goodness in each other. And we don't. We've been forced to stay confrontational, and I want that to break. Now, I don't know if that's ever going to happen in a small town like Shepherdsville. Now, we can do it here. We are going to do it here because I've learned real quick. I have a lot of folks that like me that would have never known anything about me before this or cared for me. And because it's what they want to. And I've learned that communities get built from the ground up. And maybe we can start showing small towns all across this country that we can work together. And that's the only message I would love to be able to put on this podcast, is for people to really understand that we got too many things that we like about each other. Let's start focusing on those and find those common denominators first. Yeah, we're going to have arguments. You know, I joke with people all the time, well, just because you don't like the same football team I like, it's okay. I still like you, right? So we'll do that. But I hope that helps. I mean, my thing is that's my vision, is that, you know, I'm going to try to build the best community we can.
Yeah.
With everybody involved.
And like, yeah, with thinking about the partisan divides and those conflicts, like, what are the biggest struggles you've encountered in your leadership journey, whether as mayor or in prior roles?
Well, what you do is, you know, you start out with the idea that you want to get everything done. I think the struggle for me is just slow down enough to get to know your people just a little bit better. Sometimes I've learned in whatever I've done, like even here, I come across, you know, 100 miles an hour. Slow down, Jose. Slow down and just make sure you know a little bit more about your folks, because they'll learn that you care. It just, you know, and they knew that I was very committed. So I think my struggle is always my impatience. And that would be the first thing. I think the other struggle would be, or I call it challenge or opportunity, is really understanding the processes of government. Business works a little different, especially if it's a private business. You know, they can pretty much do a lot of things they would do. Whereas here, and if you want to spend money, you have to go and ask folks, you know, if it's over a certain amount, things like that, which is all makes sense. It's just understanding that, you know, I want everything done tomorrow, you know, and everybody knows that here. And there's a process that's got to go through. So, you know, so understanding the process of government is the challenge. Understand my own impatience to be that, and just really just continue to keep working on taking inventory of the people you work with. We inventory stuff on shelves all the time. How about we inventory the people we work with? That's a novel idea, because you'll find out in the restaurant business, what I learned was I always learned everybody's name. You know, I had at one point 500 employees. I bet you I knew 490 names.
Uh-huh.
And I always try to make sure I always made them bets. You know, a new employee would start. I said, next time I come in, I got to remember your name. If I don't, I owe you $10. And so I did things like that. And then and that was important, right? Here you are as a regional for a restaurant concept, and they, you know, you're this big guy come walking in, everybody tightens up. Oh my God, he's in the building. And then they realize, no, he's a nice guy. He just, you know, talks to me every time I come in, and I help you out when I need something. They're behind. I go bust tables, or you know, go clean something up. I don't care, or cook. But I do think that's the piece for me, is being able to really control myself, don't get too hooked, just slow down just a little bit. So I think that's a challenge for me. Really, but for the most part, I don't see anything as an obstacle. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe there's an answer. Even if I don't have that answer, anything that comes up, I want the people that are doing the job to give me theirs. If they don't have a good answer, we'll find one. There's always an answer. There's always a solution. May not be one we like, but let's go find it. You know, I try to tell people all the time, you know, sometimes there are things that we don't control. You know, I talk about traffic a lot. Traffic here is horrendous, and they've just made a decision, KYTC, to close off one of our outlets, and it's really made it a challenge for the next 4 months. You know, when we get through with that, we'll continue to work at it. Most of what our challenges are with the state roads and the interstate. So we don't have money and we don't have jurisdiction over these roads. But that's a challenge. But there are answers. Some of it includes a lot of money. So if it includes a lot of money, how do you work that out? So you start talking to your state legislators, state senator, you talk to your folks that represent you in Washington, D.C., because it's not just a Shepherdsville issue, it's a major commerce issue. 65 is a major interstate on the eastern half of the country. And when it goes down, people don't like that. Businesses don't like to see their tractor trailer sitting on a parking lot. So I think the thing is, you always have to realize there's an answer. Again, it may not be an answer I like, you know, but if it's the answer that's the best solution, we need to go with it. I don't always try to fight something. If it's the right answer, there are things that have been passed in this city that maybe I don't like, but is it the right thing? Is it the legal thing? If you don't like the law, then find ways to change the law. You know, we have things in our country that people don't like. I tend to believe that if that's not something we like, let's fix it. And I think, again, going back to the whole idea that the majority of people, we have much more in common than we think. Why do we not take that and force the kind of changes we want? There are things that need to be changed. We do want to help those in need. I believe this every morning. I get up and I always say, be kind to all and help those in need. And if you do that, you're going to find yourself in a good position. You know, our life is good. If you, me and you, we're able-bodied people. We know people that aren't, on wheelchairs, all kinds of illnesses, cancer. I mean, we can talk about it. So we need to have a very grateful attitude about life. I mean, if you start there, yeah, you're still going to complain about traffic, and I'll complain about it too. But having a better disposition at anything you do, you're going to be in a better spot. And it's the way I live my life. And I've always been that way. And you can ask anybody that's ever met me, they'll say, yeah, that's about him. Because I believe that's the best way to be every day. If you're going to be grumpy, why'd you get up? Just start again next day. I would rather you be in a positive attitude when you get up and see what you can do. Because you'll find, negativity is contagious, but so is a positive attitude, right? So why don't we take that? Because I want people to be, you know, we went through challenging times with COVID. Oh, that was a struggle for a lot. It was, you know, we didn't know what was going on. It's like, oh my God, what's going to happen to us? Once you get through that, you should have been grateful to realize that you've come through that. Some people didn't, right? So if you look at that and say, okay, I'm grateful. What am I going to do with this gratefulness? Well, I know what I'm going to do. I want to make a difference. That thing says it right there.
Oh,
yeah. That's what I've. If that's really what I want to be, you know, I talk a lot about that legacy piece. Mm-hmm. That means a lot. I didn't just sit back, complain about everything that's going on, make a difference. And I'll say this. My podcast, I have one. And I'm not sure which ones you got a chance, but the one I would encourage you to listen to is Problem Solvers, Not Complainers. Problem Solvers, Not Complainers. It's so easy. And the other one that goes with that, the other episode that I put in there, Facts Versus Keyboard Warriors. I've got about 62 episodes, but those two will give you a little bit of information that says, you know what? You can keep yapping on the sidelines, or you can get involved. In whatever way, you get involved in your community, get involved. Listen, you're not going to do wrong. Getting involved, I don't care what it is you do. You're doing something. You're making a difference. I have all the respect in the world if you want to voice your opinion. It's like not voting. You know, when you don't vote, you complain, go vote and get your other folks to vote. Now, you may disagree with me, but if you have enough people that agree that maybe I'm not doing something, well, then go that way. But get people to come with you. Voting is special. We need to make sure our direction, we have so many great things that we do in this country. Then we do things like, what do we do that for? Why is that out there? Why are we doing better with this? You know, we're a compassionate society, so where did our compassion go? So it's just, for me, it's not about parties. I think it's humanity. That's a pretty deep conversation we can't get into today. But I think you learn in life that you have one, you don't get a second one, so do the very best you can. I have seen people with disabilities and people that have challenges that have such great attitudes about life. I want to be like them. Because even I have grumpy moments, but they don't. How do they do that? How do they keep that disposition in life? That's what amazes me about people. And just everything that people can accomplish. So if people are going to make a difference, and like you mentioned, you might have a political aspiration. Yeah, where does that go? Huh? What, how did you think about that? What, I'm, now it's your podcast, but I got to throw a question at you here. How's that work? So what did you? What made you start thinking like that? What made you want to do that?
I think I've always had a fascination with like making an impact, and just as a growing up, like big fan of social studies in U.S. history class.
So I'm
just
a history major.
Studying the presidents. I grew up watching the TV show The West Wing. Just growing up watching, like I want to be one of those characters one day in real life. So.
Yeah. Well, I think it's commendable that you do that because people look at, and you're, the best thing is prepare yourself. Mm-hmm. A lot of people want to jump in without really thinking and be in the spot that you need to be. Think about your skill sets. Like I tell people all the time, and this is important for me to tell everybody, not everybody can be a mayor. Not everybody can be a president, right? So it's important that you decide where your skill set is. And I'm highly recommend, if you want to be a part of something, I'm recruiting new people to be on the city council. There are, you know, again, part of it changing the experience of the people that are on that council. I'd like to put veterans on there. Veterans are an integral part of our community and their needs. We put our first Vietnam Wall, a replica from Washington, D.C. We put it in our park 2 years ago. Oh. Every 4 years, it'll be in our park. We did this last year, 25. We had our first official, March the 29th, we had our first official Vietnam Veterans Parade. My dad served twice in Vietnam, twice in Korea, 2 Purple Hearts. He died of alcoholism many, many years ago. Actually, this June will make 40 years he's been gone. Now, my thing is we need to recognize their military service. Vietnam was a horrible time for this country. It was very political. And unfortunately, what happened in that time is you didn't support moving them really out like you should have. There should have been a whole lot more logistics in making that work. Because you didn't do that, these people didn't get recognized. I mean, you didn't look at anybody, you got spit on. Mm-hmm. And that's not gonna happen. So we have in March 28th, we have a second Vietnam Veterans Parade. We'll have it as long as they're still alive. We'll continue that parade for them. And that's a recognition for not just my dad, but for all those that served. And during the time from May through November, when you come through this town, you'll see banners all over the city for all of our veterans, local veterans. We do that to recognize them. So if somebody's driving down the road, they say, that's my grandpa, that's my aunt. I believe that's an important part, is recognizing. I talk a lot about kids. I talk a lot about veterans. I really do believe in veterans. I do want to throw one last thing in there. We talked about finances, and we talked about the 1 out of 4 people in this community that don't have the funds to make sure their kids have it. I will tell you, I will not see a kid on the other side of the fence looking in at that aquatic center. Now, that's a lofty goal. So we have a thing called the Cabero Foundation. And the Cabero Foundation was established to raise funds initially for the aquatic center. We're raising money now for kids, for lower income families in our community that can't afford to go. Like a summer pass would be $100. So what we're doing is every child, we're going, hey, can you sponsor a child for $100? We're targeting right now about 300 kids that we're gonna actually be able to sponsor for this summer, this first summer to go to school. And how are we doing that? We're not gonna give little Johnny or little Sally that pass because their mom and dad doesn't have money. We've talked to the schools already, talked to the family resource counselors, and they're going to let us know which one of these kids are the lower income families, but they're gonna pay attention to them. If did Billy go from a D to a B in his classes, then he gets a pass. If Sally's every day at school, she gets a pass. If Ricky's really a good teacher's aide, then he gets a pass. So when they go home, they go, look, mom and dad, look what I got. Look what I earned. The value of life. Remember we talked earlier about the drug experimentation or the criminal activity? You have value. Every life has value. We don't understand these inner cities, these 19-year-old kids killing 19-year-olds, like, because they have no value of life. They have no family structure, no education. We know in our society that if you have a family structure and you have education, you're pretty high level of chances of succeeding in this society. We know it. It's facts matter. So I think those are the kind of things we want to try to do. So we want to reward them for that. We want to make it not a handout, but a hand up. And that kind of attitude works. So that's what it's focused on. But it's also, as we get in, we continue to keep raising money, we're going to help those kids. Football equipment is expensive for these kids. So here's a kid that wants to play. I sponsored kids before. I sponsored a number of kids. in their football league, but sometimes the parents can't afford that. We've got a recreational baseball, t-ball, softball. We've cut that cost in half. I hope to make it free one day. I'm going to put a recreational basketball in the gym, you know, for kids to come out and play free. Because the more they get to do that, the more they just get out and be and have fun. It's just different instead of just sitting home in front of the TV. I don't want you sitting in front of the TV. If we don't get that fixed, what do we learn about, you know, this doesn't have to be on the podcast, but you know what I learned about COVID? We have bad health, bad hygiene. We had to work on both of those. Our hygiene really was interesting. You remember when they were showing you the technique to wash the hands? I thought, oh my God, I do a bad job. And I wash my hands all the time. But I do think it tells us something about our society. We've let our, you know, again, I mean, I'm a healthy eater. I haven't always been since I was in the restaurant business. But we, the McDonald's at 2 and 3 years old, I mean, we just, the body wasn't sustained for that. We need to do some healthy things. So again, looking at healthier options and getting kids active. It doesn't mean you can't have these things periodically, but just keep it the process stuff. And I don't want to get too much into that, but again, our healthcare is going to really be stressed.
Yeah,
we're going to go from the 60s and 70s to the 40s and 50s. Where people are going to need immediate care. I mean, we're going to need that kind of attention. So I'm not that guy to try to fix that yet. But I just, you know, in our society, in this little place I call Shepherdsville, you know, we're going to do whatever we can to make dents into those type of things. So it's interesting. Like I said, it's interesting to be a mayor of a small town. But you can make that difference. And it can be, you know, I don't know who's gonna listen to this. I really don't. I don't know what kind of viewership you have. But for me, I just want people to really see this and go like, hey, you can make that difference. Mm. And whatever you do, I'm gonna keep an eye on you when you get started on things and see where you go.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's all good. I don't know what other questions you have, anything else?
A few more if you thought.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's interesting, like you have like a very positive and empowering attitude towards your leadership, but you mentioned some of those conflicts, like negative things happening. I was wondering if you've like had experiences of like toxic leadership, of like mm-hmm. toxic leaders, and how those like impacted you.
Yeah, let's start with the one saying my way or the highway.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not leadership. That's punitive. And those are people that are not successful at being leaders. So I've seen that. You know, when I see that, I'm not much for that. If I'm not a person that's in charge, if I'm in charge of folks and then I have a boss that's above me, that says my way or the highway, I don't have a lot of use for that. I don't work like that. I know there's plenty of opportunities for my skill set that I would remove myself. I mean, I've had 4 jobs in my whole life, fifth job being mayor, right? So I believe toxic attitude. And then what I don't like is also, and you see it, and it's not even, I don't think it's malicious at times. There are people that are in leadership roles that try to please everybody. And so when they do that, you might tell me this here and then tell you something different, which is in conflict of what needs to be done. He's just trying to make you happy, make me happy. That's toxic in itself. It just, it creates a between me and you, because this person doesn't want to deal with it, right? There's a, you have to be a person again. To be a leader, you have to be positive, but you also have to be, you got to hold people accountable. So that toxic attitude that I've seen a little bit, and I saw it here before I came into office. One of the things I did once I got elected, before I took over in January, I spent the whole month of December here. I spent more time here than the mayor spent probably in the last 6 months. And I hate to be belittling to that guy, but that was a problem. So that became toxic. They, you know, when you don't have leadership, it's kind of a survival mode. Everybody's like watching everything, you know, like, okay, I'm going to be like, because nobody controlled it. And so that became toxic. And we had to make sure that we took it out. Just stay focused on doing what's right. So toxic, and then when you see it, you, even if you're the subordinate, you have got to be able to have that conversation with your upper level management. And if it's not received, then you really know that it's time to look at different things. And I haven't had to do that too often. I think once, twice in my life, I've ever been in a situation where I didn't see it really being a future for me, because I continue to think that kind of leadership is going to tear it down. And you can see it. I saw it happen after you leave. Like, okay, because yeah, you didn't take care of your people. If you think you can do anything by yourself, you're delusional. You really do need a good team. So that's what I, from a toxic standpoint, I think you learn not to be like that, right? That's a simple way. Just, I don't want to be like that. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I've been in those conversations when somebody walks away and I hear those people talking about that person. I didn't want to be that person. You got to make everybody, you're not living in a utopia. But if they could at least see why you're asking them to do it, be more, that's the one thing that people don't spend enough time. Why do we need this? You don't need to give a dissertation. You don't need to have seven meetings. But what you do need is be concise and say, hey, this is the purpose of it. And when it succeeds, we all succeed, right? If we don't do good customer service, we'll lose business, right? If you don't want to look at it that way. Mm-hmm. If we don't do a good job here, I won't get elected. That's as simple as that. So that's where I, on the toxic part.
How do you kind of look at, like, with your work and the theme of the podcast being local global leaders, like, look at global identity and global citizenship? And, like, how does what's happening around the world affect you as a leader here in Kentucky?
Yeah, I was thinking about that question, and I thought, well, how do we do that? We're like in a crucible, right? So why don't we be just pay it, like, okay, you know, what's Shepherdsville? When I got elected, it's very different, and this is not meant to be anything derogatory, but, you know, it's like the shot heard across the state of Kentucky that Jose Cabero got elected in Shepherdsville. And if you know anything about the history, you can see it, like, that was, who's that guy? What's it? Jose Cabero, that's the guy that got mayor. And so when you see that, and I've been in the state since 68, and it's just interesting that you watch that piece, and then you think, okay. Diversity is something I really want a lot of. I grew up that way, right? When you're in the military, you meet people from all over the world. It's really kind of cool, and I wish everybody could experience that. But it's not that way. It doesn't mean that it's bad. It just means that you're not exposed to it. So a lot of small towns, Shepherdsville included, across this country are just not diverse enough. And the more they are, they'll get it. And so I felt like this is a big focus of my, I want them to believe that being here is welcoming, right? So if we do that, so let's take that, because immigration's a big deal for everybody. You know, my mother got her citizenship back in 1970, and I gave up my German citizenship. I signed off. I was so important, 10 years old. I'm a U.S. citizen, you know, because I was born on a military base. You know, Puerto Rico's a territory. But when you look at it, it's that there's a privilege of being wherever you're at. I mean, we have many good countries in this world. We're very special in our way, but we also know. So from a global standpoint, what do? Just be an example of what you would like to see at a state level or a country or even global. So we have to start thinking, okay, what do? Well, they may not like everything we're doing, but at least we're trying to build things for a community, you know, basic activities here, making a pride, being part of this, you know, making it safe and clean, and all those things that are, you know, those are the things you want to see. And I don't think that's a focus enough. I think, unfortunately, we still have folks that are just about themselves, and we see it all across the world. And I can't say anything to these people. I'm sure there's really good leaders across the world, and I see there's bad leaders too. But all I want is, if we're trying to show, we can't be speaking about anything else except for what we're doing here. Can we change the laws that we have in the state? Can we change the laws in the country? Yeah, we have process to go through that. But until that time, let's focus on the local community. And if everybody did that, I think that would help have change some dynamics of the state and the country and even the world. You know, if you ever watch those movies, there's going to be a war, aliens are coming. You see how everybody coalesces together at that point, right? Yeah. Now the world is coming together to fight the aliens. Well, do we need to have that to happen to make this thing happen? We could probably do more. Do we have hunger across the world? Yes, we do. We have people living in just horrendous situations. Now, if we spend a lot of money doing things, the fraud and the things that I see, it just really disappoint me, because the millions of dollars that could go to really good things, just there's some housing across the world. How do we show people to do that? And immigration is a very sensitive topic. You know, I look at that as there is a proper way to come. And we love to have immigration, because you need to understand, we only get better because there's more that we actually learn more. Because remember, the more people you have resources from, the better the community gets and better the country gets. But I just really believe that we could do better. We've seen some things that just disappoint me. Mm-hmm. All the money out there. That we need to help folks. So from a standpoint, I would just like to challenge our leaders. Where are we? No special interest, right? Always looking at, you know, we were talking earlier. If we're talking global, you know, do we have it where we have term limits for a president, even within the country? If we change that a little bit and we made sure that our representatives, because you remember in history, you were kind of mandated to go for a little bit. You didn't get paid anything. There was no recognition. So you did your duty, and then the next person took. Well, that's a novel idea. Seems like it changed once it hits the 20th century. You can see that now people started protecting this job more. Now today, you know, we've gone way the other way. So if we look at the leaders that we have and trying to say, these are not dumb people. They're very smart people in Washington, D.C. But we see that money influences a lot of things. We see the business aspect of it that changes things. We just need to figure out a better way to utilize the money to take care of the folks here and then taking money there. Because we're a very generous country. We know that. I think the last number I looked at was like 80 cents on the dollar of generosity is given from the states across the world. And we want to continue to be that leader. But what are we doing to help them sustain? Not, again, remember we talked about handouts and hand-ups? What are we doing? What are we teaching? What are we teaching these folks? They need electricians and plumbers and all that. So why aren't we teaching these trades and so they can build these kind of infrastructure and have the things in their own country? We don't want to always have everybody come here. If you had all the same all-stars on one team, who would win every year? That team. And the United States, I saw something that was very interesting, and I got to go back and try to find it. Somebody made a really good presentation about stopping the all-star players from each country coming here to give them the funding and the things that they can do to build their country the way they want. They love their country, but they know that the opportunities are here. We don't need them. We don't want to do that to those countries. It was a great presentation. I can't remember. It was like 10 years ago. But I think that's a great way to... So if we're looking at global, how do we make these good people, how do we help these good people that are the all-stars of their country stay there, give them funding, give them the things they need to really make, because they're, who's going to make it better but the folks that are from there? You know, I mean, listen, we're well-intended, but we don't know. We don't know all the cultures. We don't know what it is that we need to do. We're just kind of well-intended, but sometimes we don't do the planning right. You know that, I know it. We throw money at things, but are we really doing what we need to do? Let the people that run these countries really, let them have the insight of, and put proper planning in place. If we're talking a global type of thing, here, it's a small scale, but when I was campaigning, one out of three homes, I asked two questions. Has anybody been to your house? Nope. Second question is, how long you been here? A third of those people said 5 years or less. That tells you something. So I said, And I said, wow, you just moved out of here. Yeah. You know, they were saying the big city can't take anymore. They said crime. They said taxes. They said schools are bad. But we moved out here and you don't have anything. I said, that's what I'm running on, to improve the quality of life for our families, right? So when you do that, you really figure out one thing. Okay. I listened and we brought these things. If leaders would do that more, I think you'd find a buy-in more from the community instead of this divisiveness. We look at elected officials sometimes as the bad guys. Yeah, we have a few good guys, right? You know, we look at that, but we think bad, they're a lot of it bad, they don't care. We see that, right? That disconnect. We don't feel like it goes anywhere. That's why people probably don't vote. Mm-hmm. Maybe, right? So we got to get them back engaged to the process. But if we're not listening to them, we're not getting anywhere. So from a global standpoint, all the way to this country, all the way down to Little Shepherdsville, elected officials need to listen, you know. And again, like I said, my wife might question my listening skills, but I really listen as a mayor.
And with with all the sources you get for leadership, do you have any favorite like books or publications that you suggest for leadership?
I do think I try to take a people's. I'd say first of all, there's always one book that I always liked, and I haven't read it in a while. Don't sweat the small stuff. But yeah, really, it's just a book to remind us all. Just don't get caught up in I have an analogy that I make, the difference, and I make fun of government when I do this, but this is a funny thing. So what's the difference? I learned in the first year, what's the difference between government and private industry? Okay. So I'm sitting in the end zone of a football field. 50 yards, there is a fire. Okay. So I'm in the end zone. I get my bucket, got water. I'm going towards the 50-yard line. Put that fire out. I get halfway there. And I notice my bucket has a dent in it. Oh, I'll turn around. I'm gonna go back to the end zone. I'm gonna have 7 meetings, discuss the color of the bucket, a new bucket, what should I get? And then once I get it, I'll fill it back with water and go take out that fire. That fire's already burned everything down. Probably burned the whole football field. Private industry, I'm in the end zone, 50 yard. I go 25 yards, I notice the dent. I go the rest of the way, I put the fire out and come back and fix the bucket. That's what I see as a difference sometimes. And that kind of analogy tells me it's got to be broke a little bit. And whether people like this current president or not, he has a business attitude. There are ways he could do differently, but we need to see a balance in what we want in our officials. Remember, even just because we said it here as a mayor that you need to have business skills and managerial skills, I think for every position, and not just the governor, you know, the attorney general, the secretary of state, all these people need to have a skill set because they manage a lot of people. And I think that for me is, so a lot of times I'm motivated by individual stories at a local level. You know, if you'll turn around and you'll see that picture of that girl, Gracie right there. Gracie has a disability. She's in it and she works with us. She's working part-time for us through an Options Unlimited. We do a lot with disability. And so she's a great story. She has a great smile, always has a good attitude, very limited what she can do. That's her service dog ready. That's what I get inspired by. I get inspired by folks that take life as it is and make it a difference. Yes, I have actors I like. Clint Eastwood, you know. I like Denzel Washington a lot. And so you just, you know, I admire those folks. I admire some of the, you know, I'm a big Pete Rose fan. I mean, you know. But I tend to believe that I appreciate the athletes, the actors, our politicians that do really good things that through the years. I'm a history major. I'm doing an episode on Wall Street, the history of Wall Street. That's really good.
Wow.
It's a Netflix thing. It's a story about titans and it's really interesting to watch the late 1800s, and you just learn. I mean, the money was really just moving things. I mean, there was some benefits to it, but the crash told you that, you know, if you don't have any guidelines, you're going to have these kind of things happen. And so for me, now it's just the individual story. Okay. I have a lot of people that I just on a local basis that I really appreciate what they do. And you know, reading, I used to read a lot of books about the history. I just think that, you know, we can't ignore our history. We do a lot of really good things. Have we done some bad things? Yes. But to put it in perspective, remember what we started this conversation with? We started with saying a couple of good things about each other. So if you can't look at our history of this country, or even this, so if you look at that, Amir, if you look at just anything that you do, if you can't start out positive, you're never really gonna get what you need to get. You gotta be positive. You gotta be grateful to be alive. You know, you can't be good if you're not good yourself. You can't be strong. If you're not strong, who are you gonna be strong for? I see things in, you know, the CASA program, the Big Brothers program. You can see that our society, we have things we can do to help people. Let's focus on that. Why is it that we have certain demographics that really struggle more than others? I mean, why? So I just, like I said, I know we've had a pretty lengthy conversation, but I just want people to know that, you know, difference maker, yes. Let's just make difference at small levels. Maybe they'll grow. Maybe they'll metastasize into something really, you know, maybe Shepherdsville's doing some things that maybe we could all learn. You know, we're not perfect here. You know, I'm definitely not perfect. You can ask my wife. But she's a beautiful lady, and the families matters to me. I want to leave something back. You know, I'll leave you with this. Legacy is real important to me, because I never thought like that at first, right? You know, we just know that we know a lot of ordinary people that are just good people that are just living life, doing good things, never been in trouble with anything. And I thought, yeah, my ego's probably more geared towards a legacy. It doesn't make it ego. You know, what did my dad say? It wasn't bragging if you could back it up. And I believe that. But don't be boastful. Don't make it about everybody, yourself, not everybody else. If you keep a coalescing attitude, it's always going to work for you. But I just don't know what else you need, but I just thought, you know, because it's fun to do these things. I mean, I have a good time.
I appreciate it. And you answered my last question is, what's your six-word legacy? But you answered that with legacy is really important to you.
Yeah, so it really is. I mean, so I do think that, you know, with most people, just, you know, it's funny how you got to take your ego, right? Because I've always had one. You know, it's really funny that, you know, I own it. I own my impatience. I own my big ego. You're in a relationship now. You got a friend, don't you?
Yeah.
You got a friend. Yeah, well, I appreciate you coming in today.
Of course. Yeah, Mayor Kavira, thank you so much for taking the time, for inviting me to your office, for letting me meet Sheppy the cat.
Now, Sheppy the cat. Bullet doesn't want to be personal with you, so you get Sheppy will take all the loving you give her. She's loving it. But look at this.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you, Sheppy, for joining us for this interview. Did you have a good time?
Oh, yeah. She definitely had a good time. She's going to get you good. We just be careful. I don't want her to snag you or anything like that.
Oh, you're good. Well, yeah, thank you again so much. Yeah. Appreciate
it. And like I said, first of all, anything connected, when you get it out there, send it to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Do you want my watch?
No, she'll when you're not petting her, she'll just pet.
Oh, she is, yeah.
She's a, come on, girl. You're in a relationship now with him, huh? She probably wants to go. She's so funny, man. Because you know what it is, too? We have 3 days that they haven't been here. And these ladies here, they give them treats. And I said, when I leave this world, I'm coming back to be a cat here. So I get spoiled like these kids. They're so funny. They're our kids.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. Well, I appreciate you doing this. Like I said, the more we can do to put Shepherds on a map is really important to me.
That concludes my conversation with Mayor Jose Cubero. It was a real pleasure hearing about his pride in his town, and I'm grateful he welcomed me to City Hall and showed me the great recreational and sports activities they have right there in City Hall, at the skate park right across the street, and he invited me back to check out their new aquatic center currently being developed. Throughout our conversation, Mayor Cubero reflected on the important role that small towns play in bringing people together, how we can bridge divides, find common ground, and focus on what really connects us. As he put it, we've got too many things we like about each other. So let's focus on those common denominators and build the best communities we can with everyone involved. I also just greatly value how generous he was in asking about my own background and interests, which he asked about both before and during the interview, and for the advice he shared to me for my own political aspirations. Be sure to listen to his podcast titled Yes Way Jose, where he covers local news and events around Shepherdsville. My next episode drops in June, and it features Tal Green, the owner and operator of Crank and Boom Ice Cream. Until then, remember to live local and think global, fellow changemakers.